The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Network's advanced firewall solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
This is the CBS News Year-End Roundup, a special broadcast reminding you of the big events in 2016 and analyzing how they affect you. I'm Dan Revive. You'll hear our team of CBS News correspondents all around the world. We begin with what is undoubtedly the top story of the year, America's election.
Thank you.
Donald Trump was unbeatable, slicing through Republican rivals.
You are the single biggest liar.
Probably are worse than Jeb Bush.
Vulgar, not politically correct, it didn't make a difference. What counted for Donald Trump was victory.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning.
He won the presidential nomination and celebrated at the Republican convention in Cleveland. As for Hillary Clinton... She led a divided Democratic Party, though Senator Bernie Sanders did endorse her at the Philadelphia convention.
Hillary Clinton will make an outstanding president.
Clinton now had Donald Trump attacking her full time. In three debates, he called her crooked. Needed to win 270 electoral votes. He got 306. In popular votes, she got 2.8 million more than he got. But he's the winner.
And we will make America great again.
A big question, as president, what will Mr. Trump do? What a campaign. What a memorable year. We turn to CBS News political director John Dickerson, who's host of Face the Nation on CBS every Sundays. If you think about it, you know, going back to Iowa and New Hampshire, the usual start of a campaign. Honestly, John, did we think that Donald Trump would even get his party's nomination?
No. I mean, one thing that we did see in 2015 was that I was at a rally with some Scott Walker supporters, and Scott Walker had a huge, this was in South Carolina, had a huge following and a lot of support at that time in the campaign. But in talking to people in the crowd, people you would not have pegged as Trump voters were saying, you know, I like Scott Walker, but some things Donald Trump says really surprise me. Now, that still didn't make me think he's going to get the nomination. And, you know, neither did all the rest of his opponents who thought, we won't press the case against Donald Trump. We'll let him fall of his own weight, and then we'll pick up his supporters. And by the time he turned into a real threat, it was too late.
So in the primary fight, and then later in the general election, at various times, he said things that were so outrageous, so not politically correct. Other people would say even vulgar or untrue, just spreading rumors through Twitter or things he said at his rally. So again and again, I won't point at you, but many pundits and analysts said, oh, this may be the last straw. This may be where he falls. But he didn't. So how do we explain it now? What was the power that kept him up, kept him going?
The power in the Republican primaries was that he spoke with authenticity, which is always a good thing as a politician. He was running against 16 other candidates, which helped them split the non-Donald Trump vote. And when he spoke with that authenticity, it spoke to something in a core part of the Republican base that they've been hungry for. You can take it back to 2010. You can take it back to 1992. You can the grassroots of the Republican Party anxious for somebody in their leadership to speak truth as they believe it. They feel like they'd been betrayed. And so he was able to hold on to that through the primaries.
Well, John, whether it was senior Republicans, the kind of guests you have on Face the Nation, or folks at the rallies who might have come out of curiosity or because it was going to be a great show, what did they say about, well, the vulgar things he said? What did they say about that? Well, why did they excuse that?
There were among the core Trump supporters, basically they excused everything he did because he spoke to them in an emotional, they made an emotional connection with him. But the people you're talking about who were reluctant Trump supporters. Ultimately, in the end, they made a bargain. And basically, they said he will be better than Hillary Clinton. And they picked their issues. So they liked it on the Supreme Court. They thought, we want to have a conservative to keep the conservative control of the court. And only by electing him will we do that. Or if they were Second Amendment supporters, they would say he's going to be better on the Second Amendment than Hillary Clinton. And so in the end, they had reservations, but they had more reservations about Hillary Clinton, and they had specific policy positions that they thought he would support.
John, in the days leading up to Christmas, the president-elect tweeted, in effect, I figured out the system better. Hillary Clinton may have gotten more popular votes, but if that's how you would win the presidency, then I would have focused on those states, and I would have won that way, too. Okay, we can't check that boast, but he did figure out what states to focus on, therefore achieving slim victories in places like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and thus winning the presidency.
And absolutely. You cannot take away from Donald Trump the strategic and tactical genius of somebody who's never been involved in politics and who didn't just win on the normal road, but created his own new road. Now, there were contributory factors, many of them, including the weakness of the candidate he was running against. But as a strategic and tactical matter, and also, by the way, he was the author of a lot of this, which is to say his connection with the people, which was the strength of his campaign. That's why he did well in those states that Democrats have usually carried. But having said all of that, and not to take anything away from that, but he did ultimately early on talk about and boast about being able to win in states like New Jersey and California because he was going to create this national movement. That is the goal that he didn't get to. And it's why I think it rankles him that almost 3 million more votes went to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, keeping in mind, indeed, she got about 2.9 million more votes than he did. So she got 48%. He got 46%. And yet she lost. She's gone. Are Democrats getting over it? What signs should we look for as 2017 dawns and the whole country, you know, wants success for the country?
I don't think Democrats will get over it until they find a new banner to march behind. And that's either a specific policy battle with Donald Trump or a specific person who comes forward as the leader of the Democratic Party. What will keep Democrats from getting their feet underneath them again are continued questions about the role of the Russians in meddling in the American election. And also an issue are the unresolved questions about the FBI director's letter late in the campaign, which either depressed turnout or reminded Republicans of the kind of constant sense of drama when it came to the Clintons and made some who were reluctant about Donald Trump move into his camp.
And when it comes to the Russian hack and investigating it, there will always be pushback from the Trump team because they don't want questions about the legitimacy of his win.
That's exactly right. And you have a balance there. And this is one of the inconvenient balances a president has to face in office every single day, which is the competing priorities. One is that there is a serious national security issue when all intelligence agencies believe that the Russians meddled in the U.S. election. That's on the one hand. On the other is, as you say, this strong desire not to have the Trump victory seem in any way illegitimate. Well, those are in conflict. And which one do you elevate and think as more important? For the moment, the Trump campaign has decided that protecting its legitimacy as the victor is more important than publicly acknowledging what all the intelligence agencies have, which is that the Russians were at least at some level involved in the election.
That's John Dickerson, the host of Face the Nation on CBS every Sunday. John, happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Stay with us for a lot more. Our next subjects, terrorism in 2016, cyber hacking blamed on Russia, and Syria's horrible civil war on the CBS News Year-End Roundup. On the CBS News Year-End Roundup, a special program recapping 2016, I'm Dan Raviv. Correspondent Pam Coulter begins this part of our roundup by looking back at some of the most vicious attacks by people apparently motivated by Muslim radicalism, believing this is the way to fight against Western societies.
More blood was shed in terror attacks in 2016 from Brussels.
I'm thinking, I gotta make it. I gotta see my daughters again.
To Orlando.
Shane Evan Tomlinson.
Fewer attacks were directed by terror groups, but were instead carried out by radicalized lone wolves.
The killer took in extremist information and propaganda over the internet.
The FBI continues to investigate more than 1,000 homegrown terror cases,
making it critical for law enforcement to work with Silicon Valley to counter extremism online. Coalition forces made gains against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, but terrorism experts like Sanjan Gohel believe terror groups will respond by ramping up attacks in Europe and the U.S.
The more space that ISIS loses, the more potential plots we will see.
Pam Coulter, CBS News.
When it comes to the terrorism threat in the United States, as perceived by many Americans, it seems to be perhaps right around the corner. You have no idea when it's going to happen. The worst attack in the U.S. certainly this past year was on the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. 49 people killed by one young man who said he was swearing allegiance to ISIS. Return to CBS News, Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Pegues. The terrorist groups, Jeff, have all sorts of websites. They show videos and sermons, you know, glorifying what they're doing in the Middle East, calling for attacks. That could motivate people who are radical to try to take action.
That's why U.S. law enforcement has been reaching out to tech companies to help clamp down on this message that has been disseminated from ISIS, trying to recruit members by glorifying its message. It's all propaganda. And so U.S. officials have long felt that if you can shut down that message in some way, it will prevent ISIS and Al-Qaeda, those types of terrorist organizations, from recruiting more members.
Jeff, you're also covering cybersecurity. So with the revelation that hackers believed to be Russians got into the Democratic Party emails and computer systems, what does that say about cybersecurity? Hackers can get into just about everything.
Well, whether hackers are criminal in nature or it's a nation state, the only thing you can do is patch those weaknesses in your systems. Cyber warfare or information warfare, that's the new game in town when it comes to some of these nation states. And the intrusions into the DNC and the DCCC, John Podesta's emails, the people that we have spoken with, both intelligence and law enforcement, as well as private security groups who advise intelligence officials here in this country, what we're hearing is there is no other culprit than Russian operatives.
The experts believe those hackers are linked with the Russian government. They do believe that.
They believe that those hackers are linked to Russian intelligence, GRU. We have not heard any other suspects pop up. So the question now is, going forward, before January 20th, certainly, is there evidence to prove intent? That the intent, according to the CIA, which was to tip the scales in favor of Donald Trump, can they prove that?
An international political question, why Russia would have wanted Mr. Trump to win, or did the Russian government simply not like Hillary Clinton for various reasons? But as you say, that's the question, whether the truth will come out. Barack Obama asked the intelligence community to figure it out, and he'd probably like some public explanation before January 20th.
Yeah, he wants to get it on the record before he leaves office. There are some people who feel that the administration has not moved fast enough in countering this threat, that the Russians have been quite busy hacking into U.S. systems, and why hasn't the U.S. responded? So, yeah, he wants to get this on the record. And the evidence, according to our intelligence sources, it's there.
At his last news conference of the year before leaving for Christmas and New Year's in Hawaii, President Obama revealed that he had spoken to Russia's president at a summit in China in September about this.
I felt that the most effective way to ensure that that didn't happen was to talk to him directly and tell him to cut it out, and there were going to be some serious consequences if he didn't. And in fact, we did not see further tampering of the election process.
Russia's been making a big push in the Middle East to be the major power. We saw that in the sixth year of Syria's civil war, 500,000 people killed, millions of refugees. CBS News correspondent Holly Williams, you've covered all that. We reach you using Skype in Istanbul, Turkey, Russia's warplanes helping the embattled Assad government.
You know, the Russian air campaign in Syria actually started in late 2015. But we've really felt its impact this year, most noticeably in Aleppo. Aleppo, you know, the biggest city in northern Syria, is to all intents and purposes under the control of the Syrian regime. And that is a huge victory for the regime after 4 years of fighting in the city. And due in part, probably in large part, to Russia's air campaign in Syria. But Russia has been condemned by a lot of people here in the Middle East who are furious that it's backed a government that's indiscriminately bombed its own people. And Russia's behavior in Aleppo has been condemned by the U.S. as barbaric.
What about the U.S. role, the number of Americans, military, mainly it seems special forces, on the ground in Syria, rose recently to around 500. What are the Americans doing, and who's getting U.S. support?
Well, I think broadly speaking, the U.S. is doing a couple of different things in Syria. First of all, let's remember, this is no longer a two-sided conflict. It's a multi-sided conflict. You have the Syrian regime, you have the Syrian rebels, you have Kurdish groups operating in the country's northeast, and then, of course, you have ISIS. So the American Special Forces that are operating in Syria are working together with a group known as the Syrian Democratic Forces, and that's a coalition that is dominated by Kurdish groups up in the northeast of Syria. And the reason the U.S. is working with them is they've done a lot of the fighting against ISIS. They've taken a lot of territory back from ISIS.
That's true this past year in both Syria and Iraq.
Here's what's interesting and I think distressing. What we've seen recently is the Syrian Democratic Forces that are backed by the U.S., in some cases fighting against Syrian rebels who were also backed by the U.S. And that gives you a sense of just how complicated, how messy this conflict has become.
CBS's Holly Williams in Turkey covering Syria's civil war. Stay with us just ahead, America's economy. Are you ready for higher interest rates, but probably lower taxes? That and more on the CBS News Year-End Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS Radio News app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, the CBS Evening News, and the Weekend Roundup when you want it. You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS Radio News app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup for 2016, I'm Dan Revive. We'll review the economy and look ahead, but first, the divisive issue of fatal shootings by police officers. Here's CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman.
Don't shoot him.
2016 was another year where there were controversial killings of African Americans by police.
Don't you do it! Don't shoot him!
In September, in Charlotte, North Carolina, Keith Scott was shot and killed. Police said he was carrying a weapon and refused to comply with orders. Scott's family said he was suffering from brain damage. There were 2 days of angry protests. The shooting was ruled justifiable. In July, near Minneapolis, another incident.
Oh, my God, please don't tell me he's dead.
Philandro Castile was pulled over by officers investigating a robbery. Castile told one of the officers he was licensed to carry a firearm and did have a weapon. As he went to get his license,
you shot four bullets into him, sir.
The officer was charged with second-degree manslaughter. Just 1 day later, it was police who came under fire. Five officers were ambushed and killed. The man responsible said he was angry over the killings of blacks and wanted to kill white people. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Let's consider the American economy with a new president coming into office January 20th. With a Republican administration and still a Republican-dominated Congress, how might that affect you? Will you get a new job if you want one? Make more money? Keep more of your money if taxes are reduced? We're joined by CBS News senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger. I'm thinking first about the tax reform the Republicans are promising. President-elect Trump wants a lower tax rate, though by redefining the tax brackets, some people could end up in a higher bracket. But Jill, for most Americans and for corporations, it looks like income tax will be lower starting in the new year. Does that seem right?
I think so. I mean, there's an interesting thing that's going on right now, which is we have a Trump potential tax cut, but we also have a Paul Ryan tax cut. And maybe there's a few others floating around. But between these plans, here's what we know. Tax rates will likely go down. The 39.6%, the highest rate, will probably come down some. But each one of the brackets will also come down. It's not going to be equal in terms of benefits for everybody. Most of the benefits from both the proposed Trump plan, which he announced while he was on the campaign, obviously subject to change, as well as the Ryan plan, most of the benefits go to the wealthiest individuals. But according to Tax Policy Center, we look at an average household that makes about $50,000 should get somewhere around, let's say, $900 or $1,000 in tax savings, almost 2%.
What do you think the individual ought to do or think about? Because it might change the balance of where I'm investing or where I'm putting my money.
Well, I think for most people who are investing in their retirement accounts, there's no big change, right? Because the taxation on a taxable account is different than a retirement account. That said, I think there's going to be a potential opportunity to make a big move in the last week of the year for someone who makes a lot of money. And here's why. Under both the Trump plan and the Ryan plan, the value of itemized deductions, when that would include everything from mortgage interest, charitable deductions, state and local taxes, those itemized deductions will be less valuable under a new tax plan. So if you are going to be giving some money away at the end of this year, I might give away the gift for this year and next year's gift because your deductions may not be worth as much in 2017 as in 2016.
Even property taxes, you might think about paying them before this year's over.
That's right. I mean, for a lot of people, you get a bill that comes in around now, but it's not due, let's say, until the middle of January. If I am an itemizer, maybe I would pay that in advance with this year's dollars as long as I have the money on hand.
Okay, how about the big picture, Jill, which is the claim by the Trump team that by cutting taxes and by injecting more money into infrastructure projects, we're going to see economic growth a lot faster than it's been. I know there could be dangers with that, for instance, inflation, but are they making a persuasive case?
Well, I think if you consider that if hundreds of millions of dollars are spent on various projects, that will help the economy. There's no other way around it. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who may be rooting against some of these programs, but frankly, both Democrats and Republicans have talked about infrastructure spending. The key with the success of infrastructure spending is how the dollars are actually spent, where they're spent. You know, it's a little bit different when you do this kind of spending when the economy is already growing versus being in a recession. It's also different when the unemployment rate's down at 4.6% versus where it was, let's say, during the height of the financial crisis and then the recession, not a 10%. So it's not going to have as much bang for its buck. Most people who are looking at these infrastructure spending plans think that this would be a positive for the economy. I don't think we're going to see 3.5% or 4% growth, but frankly, we're at 2% right now. If we got to 2.5% or maybe even closer to 3%, that would be a big change and that would be great.
Speaking of percentages, in December, when the Federal Reserve raised interest rates for the first time in a year, only second time in a decade, the prime rate at the banks went up from 3.5% to 3.75%. What's the outlook for this coming year?
Well, according to the Federal Reserve officials themselves, they put together projections for the subsequent couple of years. So if we look at those projections, they are saying 0.75% additional to the current rate environment. So what does that mean? 0.75 point increases. You know what? if I go back a year ago, they thought 2016 was going to have 4 quarter-point increases, and we had exactly 1.
But according to the Fed, they believe that a year from now, the prime rate at the bank, instead of being 3.75, will probably be 4.5. So remind us, that can hurt if you have a floating rate loan and you're paying more, but it does help a lot of Americans too.
Well, imagine the poor savers who have been just struggling for the last 8, 9, 10 years even. This is the moment where they're finally saying, oh my gosh, I'm going to maybe earn more than 1% in my safe money account. Mm-hmm. If you are a saver, your checking, your savings, your money market accounts, when you renew your CDs, you're going to see a little bit more interest. It is not going back to 5 or 6% anytime soon, but a little bit more is a little bit more, and you'll take it. And as you said, conversely, if you're a borrower, the news is not as good. We know that mortgage rates before the election, 30-year fixed rate mortgages were around 3.5 or so. And now we're looking at next year. The National Association of Realtors says somewhere between 4.5% and 5%.
The 30-year mortgage getting toward what used to be called more normal levels. Jill Schlesinger, CBS News Senior Business Analyst. Happy holidays. And thank you, Jill.
And thank you.
Please follow us on Twitter. She is at Jill on Money. We have headlines at CBS Radio News. I'm at Dan Revive. And this is the CBS News Year-End Roundup. On the CBS News Year-End Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. One of the three branches of our government, the judicial branch, had a big change in 2016. Supreme Court Justice Scalia, an eloquent, fascinating conservative, died in February at age 79. And the court got through the rest of the year with 8 justices, not 9, as the Republican-controlled Senate ignored the nominee for the vacant seat. Correspondent Barry Bagnato's report includes highlights of CBS News coverage.
With Justice Antonin Scalia's death and President Obama's replacement,
Chief Judge Merrick Brian Garland,
shelved by Senate Republicans,
the next president's going to make the decision.
At least 3 major Supreme Court rulings were impacted. Lacking Scalia's conservative vote, foes of the University of Texas Affirmative Action Program failed to eradicate it.
I don't believe students should be treated differently based on their race.
Secondly, public union non-member fees were spared. And in the third case, the justices avoided an expected deadlock in a significant Obamacare contraception dispute by telling lower courts to seek compromise. There were protests in the Southwest after the High Court ended deportation protections for many working immigrants.
We gather in repentance.
Texas abortion foes hung their heads.
The court overturned strict regulations Texas imposed on clinics in the name of safety.
A big case coming up on transgender rights.
A high school student, born female, is fighting for the right to use the boys' bathroom.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News.
North Carolina found its economy was harmed by HB 2, House Bill 2, passed and signed into law by majority Republicans in that state, blocking cities and counties from having anti-discrimination rules. In other words, a liberal city council could not declare that transgender citizens can use any public bathroom they want to. North Carolina law says you go to the restroom that matches the gender on your birth certificate. As a result, music stars, sports teams, conventions canceled events in North Carolina. 4 days before Christmas, CBS's Jim Crisula reported on a failed effort to repeal the law.
The demise of a legislative deal to repeal the state's so-called bathroom bill will likely lead to more economic backlash. Maura Kiesling is director of the National Center for Transgender Equality.
They know they have hurt their state. They know they have hurt transgender citizens, not just in North Carolina, but all over the country.
The supposedly bipartisan deal to kill the state's LGBT law fell apart amid deepening political acrimony in the state. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Let's consider issues that touch a lot of Americans, but we wonder whether the new Trump administration will be very interested in them. I'm thinking about criminal justice and policing, very important to the outgoing President Barack Obama, not a big topic for Mr. Trump, not during the campaign, as far as I could tell. We turn to CBS News senior legal analyst Andrew Cohen. Basically, candidate Trump took the side of the police when there was a conflict between police and community. He did say to the mostly black inner cities. What have you got to lose?
He has clearly tried to define himself as the law and order candidate. What is that going to mean for local policing? Probably not much, right? The Justice Department under the Obama administration had investigated local police forces where there was evidence of racial disparities or police misconduct. Those investigations are likely to ease. There's a question of militarization of police equipment, right? Remember, Barack Obama famously took away from local police forces the tanks and the other military surplus gear that they had been using. Donald Trump figures to give that stuff back. And Jeff Sessions, who is the presumptive next Attorney General of the United States, has a long record of opposition to most sentencing reform. So if there's going to be sentencing reform, for example, in drug cases, it's hard to imagine Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General is going to be in favor of it. And the final thing to say, Dan, is marijuana. Big, big changes, right, on the state level for marijuana. California legalized it. It's been legalized in other states as well. The federal government still considers marijuana illegal. Jeff Sessions is on the record as saying that marijuana is a very bad thing, that people who use marijuana are bad people.
Senate hearings on Jeff Sessions, the nominee for attorney general, are scheduled for January, with Republicans saying they'll get that done right in time for Inauguration Day. After all, Sessions is himself a Republican senator. Andrew, can I just bring you back to sentencing reform? There are a lot of Republicans who have favored the notion that America's prisons have too many inmates.
There are, and there is still strong conservative support on Capitol Hill for sentencing reform, both in the House and the Senate. But there is also a definite faction of Republican senators. Jeff Sessions was one of them. Tom Cotton in Arkansas was another. Ted Cruz, who switched on the topic, who came out and said, you know what, we have to start worrying now about the heroin epidemic, about the opioid epidemic. We have to start worrying now about rises in murder rates in some American cities. Maybe this whole smart on crime approach is the wrong approach to take. I think that's a conversation that's going to take place on Capitol Hill. But you go from having allies for the reformers in the White House to folks who clearly are going to be opposed to it.
That's CBS News senior legal analyst Andrew Cohen. Thanks and happy holidays, Andrew.
My pleasure, Dan. You too.
Now reporting on interesting people in the news in 2016, CBS's Jim Chenevay. What's the buzz? Tell
me what's happening. Hollywood abuzz by the split of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
The two have been together for 12 years.
Reality TV star Kim Kardashian West shaken but unharmed after being held up in Paris.
Five robbers were disguised as police officers.
Wrestler Hulk Hogan won the biggest match of his life, a $140 million jury verdict for a sex video posted by Gawker.
It's turning my world upside down.
The two sides settled for less, but Gawker went out of business. Also exiting,
Fox News chairman and CEO Roger Ailes resigned amid a sexual harassment investigation.
Bob Dylan feeling great after getting the Nobel Prize. So was Olympic gymnast Simone Biles for bringing home the gold.
Everything has paid off.
But swimmer Ryan Lochte's career sank after concocting a crime story.
The incident may end up costing Lochte millions.
With a lot more on sports this past year, CBS News correspondent Dave Barrett.
They did go to the World Series, Game 7 at Cleveland.
The Cubs have done it,
said Pat Hughes.
The longest drought in the history of American sports is over.
108 years, Chris Bryant.
This trumps everything. I mean, I'm out here crying, man. I'm so happy.
Championship year, baby.
It was in Ohio.
Cleveland, this is for you.
LeBron James and the Cavs stunned Golden State. First title for Cleveland in 52 years. College hoops.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship. Oh! Yes! Villanova!
1-2 step and let it fly.
A buzzer-beating three-pointer. Super Bowl 50. Broncos win.
This has been a tough, resilient, unselfish bunch of guys.
And Peyton Manning retires. Icons left us. Muhammad Ali and Mr. Hockey.
Gordie Howe, a shot, he scores!
Arnold Palmer is the Masters champion.
Arnold Palmer made golf popular. Jim Nantz on The King.
A man of total class and integrity.
Dave Barrett, CBS News.
We have a lot more coming up to remind you of the major events of 2016. Many people consider it a shocking year. We'll talk about climate and weather, then go to China on the CBS News Year-End Roundup.
Get the latest information when you want it. Download the CBS Radio News app, either on iOS or Android. You also get great features, breaking news, and access to the CBS Radio News Twitter and Facebook feeds. Learn about your world while you take care of all the things you need to take care of. It's perfect for the gym, running errands, or doing chores around the house. CBS Radio News. Get it in the Apple App Store or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup, I'm Dan Revive. President-elect Trump's nominee for head of the Environmental Protection Administration has opposed the EPA, suing to stop regulations that were aimed at slowing climate change. As Oklahoma's Attorney General Scott Pruitt felt, the federal government has been doing too much about greenhouse gases. He thinks the government has been harming industry and business in the U.S. Note also that the nominee for Secretary of State, also requiring Senate confirmation, is Rex Tillerson, the chief executive of the huge oil company ExxonMobil. That brings us to CBS News correspondent Peter King reporting on climate and weather problems, big ones this past year.
The debate on human-induced climate change reached a fever pitch in 2016. It was a major campaign issue for Donald Trump.
A lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax.
There's little doubt that something's going on. In Alaska, the lack of snow and ice made the Iditarod sled race a slog.
The weather's been warm and it keeps melting it away.
There was a lot of record-setting heat there. Further south, catastrophic wildfires from the southeast to California.
This is the fifth year of an ongoing drought.
There was record flooding in Texas, the Carolinas, and Louisiana.
Where is all this water supposed to go?
Florida got two hurricanes, the first there since 2005.
To go, wow, oh boy, that is some gust of wind that has just pushed me.
By year's end, even with a La Nina cool down in the Pacific, government scientists said the heat was still on.
It's likely that 2016 will still pass 2015 as the warmest year on record.
Peter King, CBS News.
Let's talk about America's place in Asia. Donald Trump rejects the trade deals negotiated in recent decades. So TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, designed to box out China and trade more freely with Japan, Vietnam, Australia, New Zealand, and others, won't be ratified. And CBS News Asia correspondent Adriana Diaz, we find you in Beijing. What has Mr. Trump said about China?
I think the question may be, what has he not said on the subject of China? He has gone after China, most often on Twitter, on a slew of sensitive issues for China. He's attacked their buildup in the South China Sea, which China sees as a critique of its sovereignty. He's accused China of undercutting global competitors in trade. He accused them of stealing the military drone most recently. China took issue with the word stealing.
Yet just after the Trump victory, Beijing was pretty nice about it.
The Chinese President Xi Jinping sent a congratulatory message early on. He then followed up with a phone call. The Chinese are very practical. They want to work with whoever is in power to build a strong relationship between the U.S. and China, the world's two largest economies.
Mr. Trump spoke about making a deal, as in squeezing out some concessions to keep the one China policy, the U.S. rejecting Taiwan's claim to be the Republic of China. What could a deal conceivably be?
As far as China's concerned, nothing. They don't believe the Taiwan issue, which it calls one of the most sensitive issues between China and the U.S., can be a bargaining chip on the negotiating table. You don't accept the one China policy, no diplomatic ties. That's what China says.
And the death of the trade deal, TPP, is that clearly a win for China?
It's certainly a win for China. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is a trade pact between 12 Pacific countries, including the U.S., some South American countries, Japan, and others, that purposefully excluded the world's second largest economy, China, as a way to counterbalance China's growing economic power. It was heralded by President Obama, supported by Hillary Clinton, until she decided not to support it. And Donald Trump says he'll reject it on day one. China has been pushing its own trade deal that would involve many of the same players as the TPP, but would have China at the center of it as the economic powerhouse.
Adriana, what's the status of North Korea, especially the danger that that reclusive communist dictatorship has missiles and nuclear bombs?
increasingly hostile, Dan, given a slew of missile launches and two nuclear tests this year. The most recent in September was its largest yet. Analysts tell us that North Korea has achieved recent advancements in its nuclear program. We're told they can likely attach a rudimentary nuclear warhead onto a missile, which they hadn't been able to do before. Now, what's keeping the continental U.S. out of their reach for now is that their missiles can't reach the lower 48, though North Korea's neighbors, Japan, China, and of course its nemesis, South Korea, is well within reach.
By the way, is Mr. Trump likely to get along with the colorful but erratic president of the Philippines? For decades, an important military ally, but President Rodrigo Duterte implicated in the killings of perhaps thousands of drug dealers, even addicts, was very rude to President Obama. He seemed to be moving toward Beijing.
Lately, he's been cozying up to China, saying that he's willing to set aside an international ruling in the South China Sea that was in favor of the Philippines over China. But it remains to be seen, he certainly had some warm words to share with Mr. Trump when he was elected. The two shared a phone call where Duterte congratulated Mr. Trump. President Duterte reportedly said, "Long live Mr. Trump. We both curse at the slightest reason. We are alike."
In Beijing, CBS News Asia correspondent Adriana Diaz. Xie xie. Thanks, Adriana. Happy holidays.
Mei guanxi. No problem.
That's Mandarin. Now in plain English, CBS's Stephen Portnoy reviews the political scandals here in the U.S. this past year.
She destroyed 33,000 emails.
Donald Trump hit Hillary Clinton on her use of a private server.
I never sent or received any classified material.
The FBI did find classified info, but Director Comey determined
no charges are appropriate in this case.
Though he shook up the campaign in the final days, sending word of emails found on Anthony Weiner's laptop. WikiLeaks published thousands of emails stolen from Clinton campaign chair John Podesta.
The Russian government has engaged in espionage against Americans.
Aides to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie were convicted of plotting to create the Bridgegate traffic jam.
Both say they will appeal. Christie says he didn't know about the scheme.
But the case ruined his relationship with the president-elect. Melania Trump took the words right out of Michelle Obama's mouth.
You work hard for what you want in life.
That scandal was blamed on a Trump staff writer.
Here's what correspondent Steve Kathan adds on 2016 tech stories.
Facebook came under fire for fake news stories during the campaign and for its trending section.
Blacklisting, in a lot of cases, conservative news.
The government got into the locked iPhone of one of the San Bernardino shooters after asking for but not getting Apple's help.
If you put a back door in, that back door's for everybody.
Samsung's Galaxy Note 7 phone was hot.
Look over and my phone's on fire.
Battery problems forced a huge recall. Millions used their devices to play Pokemon Go.
It's kind of crazy, actually.
A breakthrough for infertile women, the first three-parent baby.
But it's DNA from three different people.
And it was up, up, and away for the first solar-powered plane to go round the world.
The view is absolutely gorgeous.
Steve Kathan, CBS News.
A memorable year, that's for sure. We're on the radio, and you can use our app called CBS Radio News to find us anytime with the Weekend Roundup. Next week, we'll have part two of our year-end roundup, a special broadcast from Washington. Produced by Steve Dorsey, I'm Dan Revive, CBS News. On the CBS News year-end roundup, we'll talk in a few minutes about electronics items you might want to buy. First, let's check in with our transportation correspondent, Chris Van Cleve. In 2016, one of your big stories was Tesla, the electric car, and its feature called Autopilot. A 40-year-old man who posted a lot of videos about tech that he loved was killed in a Florida crash while using that feature.
Tesla would call this basically think of it as a very smart cruise control. They're stopping short of saying it's pure autonomous driving. The driver still needs to have their hands on the wheel and still needs to be paying attention. And Tesla has pushed back in many of these accidents involving autopilot, saying that it was not the proper use of autopilot. In this case, it does appear that the system failed to detect a truck.
Now, something about the sun shining, maybe, and so the Tesla system got fooled by that. But Tesla would say, hey, the human being should have noticed the truck.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking, as a consumer, I might try something new, especially if I heard it was a beta test, and wonder, are we all supposed to be the test pilots out there reporting on problems? I guess the answer would be yes, as long as they're not
lethal or fatal problems.
Yeah, I mean, essentially that's what they're doing. They're crowdsourcing the data here and improving the design with every software update. Clearly something went wrong.
Is Tesla making a change?
Tesla has continued to upgrade the technology and is moving towards a fully automated driving technology that they hope to have in those cars soon.
They say it's getting better. Hey, because it is holiday time, Chris, a lot of our listeners are probably traveling, well, through airports. And they're probably finding long lines, especially at the security check. Now, I know you can pay money and you can sign up for TSA Pre, and that'll probably save time because you don't even have to take your shoes off. But most people don't have that. What do the long lines tell us? That the government can't meet its own standards?
Well, we had a real rough start to the summer season. If you think back to May and these ridiculously long lines at airports like Chicago O'Hare, Atlanta, Hartsfield Jackson, and others where you had thousands of people missing flights because the security lines had gotten so long. That was due in part to staffing shortages, also due to a huge increase in the number of people flying. The TSA has told us that they saw some weekends this summer that were busier than previous year's Thanksgiving holidays. It's going to be busy, and those lines will be a little bit longer than you would typically see, and certainly with some flyers that are not experienced. So there will be some delays at the checkpoints.
Does the TSA say it got prepared for this December holiday season, either with more workers or, well, sometimes I saw posters that were aimed at us, the traveler. Hey, help us. Right? Take out your liquids into a separate bag, that kind of thing.
The TSA has added staff. They made around 1,400 hires. They've converted people from part-time to full-time. So there are more frontline TSA employees now than there were 6 months ago.
Good luck to all travelers. Now, you may be shopping, if not for holiday presents, then for post-Christmas bargains, perhaps. We turn to Brian Cooley, tech expert and editor at CNET, the incredibly informative website that's owned by CBS. Let's talk about consumer electronics this holiday season. Brian, what's new but hopefully affordable?
Well, Dan, I think the thing that's going to be in that category is going to be where we're seeing smartphones come down in price. Now, not all of them are getting cheaper. You know, the Apple phones are still very expensive. The premium flagship Android phones are as well. But if you go look under the covers at some of the more affordable phones out there, they don't give up much of anything in performance. We've gotten to the point where all the phones are excellent, and now we're not so much tied to these two-year contracts anymore, so giving a phone has become much easier than it used to be when you had to sign someone up for a two-year commitment. And, you know, smartphones are the number one thing in the world in terms of electronics. Another one that's very affordable, though, and it's a red-hot category, is this miniature game console from Nintendo called the NES Classic. It's like they took one of the old Nintendo consoles from back in the 80s, shrunk it by three-quarters, and you still hook it up to your TV, but now it has the 30 classic games of yore already baked into the thing. No cartridges or anything. It should be $60. You have to find one on eBay sometimes, and that means you're going to get gouged. But keep an eye on the stores. You might get lucky and get one at list price.
Now, outside the home, what's portable for entertainment and information sources that I can walk around with?
You know, you need to look at, obviously, the phone. The phone remains where all of our media lives, so I don't have a new device for you there. What I do have, though, is a trend that is happening toward wireless and better audio. We all heard that Apple got rid of the earphone jack recently. And as a result, they want you to use these new wireless pods. The idea that there are really good Bluetooth wireless headphones and earbuds out there is a major trend in the year or two ahead. I think more and more phones are going to get rid of the headphone jack, whether you like that or not. And we're also seeing a resurgence in high-quality sound. We're going to see more products next year that boast of having really good audio, not just convenient audio. We gave up a lot of fidelity in the last, 10 years by moving to MP3s and such. There's a revival in interest in high-quality audio because we're listening on headphones that really reveal the quality now. And what's interesting, vinyl LPs have taken off. They now outsell MP3s in the UK, for example, because people appreciate their high-quality sound.
Controlling my home, you know, the heat, the lights going on and off, that kind of thing, even when I'm, you know, far away at the office, that's become a lot more popular. Why is that?
Because of Amazon Echo and Google Home. We didn't have a great, easy way to control our smart homes before. You could buy a smart light switch, garage door opener, thermostat. A lot of us have those. But you end up fussing with apps to operate them. And that feels like a step backwards, more complicated, not less. But now you've got these voice assistants from Amazon and Google, these little devices that sit on a counter, and you just talk to them. And you say, open the garage door, turn on the lights, change the thermostat without touching anything. And suddenly it all came together, and the smart home started to make sense.
a lot of those devices appear to be inexpensive as well. But what about the setup? That still looks difficult to me.
And that's where these voice devices, I think, make the big difference. When you had to have a bunch of different apps and a bunch of different devices, it was really fussy. These new voice assistants will speak to just about every brand, not all, but just about every brand of smart home device. Therefore, you have a single point of contact now. You just talk, and it figures out how to communicate with those devices. That's also a big part of why they're popular.
Well, here's a broad question for 2017. What else strikes you as an electronics item that we're going to see more and more in the new year?
Well, one of the things we're going to see more of is a big surge in new ways to get television. We've seen a little bit of this now, what they call skinny bundles that are streamed. Instead of having a big cable bundle, you might have a smaller, more affordable streaming bundle that you can watch on your TV, but also on your phone or tablet, so you get more usage out of it. And the networks and the big broadcasters have realized this is the future, and they are flooding us with new offers that we couldn't have imagined a year ago. So that's a major trend. It's not a device, but it is a major new way to get television as well as movie content. And I think we're also going to see a big push next year toward augmented reality, as opposed to this past year has been about virtual reality. Augmented reality is when you still see the world through either glasses or a phone, but it's augmented with labels or indicators that make it more contextually clear.
More information when we look at something, even on our tablet or our phone, right?
Exactly.
Brian Cooley of CNET, thanks very much and happy holidays.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you for listening to part one of our two-part special, the CBS News Year-End Roundup. We hope you'll be with us also for part two. If you miss it on the radio, do an internet search for CBS Weekend Roundup. You'll find our podcasts. Happy holidays. I'm Dan Revive, CBS News.